Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com for a Monday, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And it certainly is beginning to look a lot like Christmas out there, right? It looks a lot more like Christmas today on Monday, March 25th, than it did on December 25th. That is for sure after our big storm over the weekend, which is still impacting a lot of people here in New Hampshire and some very close by. As a matter of fact, I mean, we heard about the 2 feet of snow that some areas in the northern part of the state had. But I think the most damaging was when the snow mixed with the freezing rain and sleet and had an impact on the power lines and trees falling, power lines falling, and a lot of power outages all around the state. Our producer behind the glass, Andrew Gibson, were you impacted at all by the storm over the weekend?
So where I was at in Boston, we actually just got a lot of rain.
Yeah.
We didn't get any snow.
Yeah. So that really, Boston escaped, and much of southern New Hampshire managed to escape pretty much. But in New Boston, the town has not seen, get this, has not seen as many outages as they've had over the weekend since 2007, when the big ice storm hit. So New Boston has not seen a storm like this in the sense of, mix of ice and snow in 17 years. And Eversource has said that it expects to have power restored to most of the customers in New Boston by 11:30 tonight. And they report this morning, as of around 6 o'clock, that more than 68% of the customers in New Boston still did not have power. If you're listening in New Boston, give us a call and give us an update. Statewide, more than 23,000 outages were being reported by Eversource, Unitil, the New Hampshire Electric Co-op, and Liberty Utilities as of this morning. But there were more over the weekend, and lots of outages, lots of downed power lines or trees, it's a mess in a large portion of the state. But the southern tier kind of escaped it, but it was very impactful. And now the damage is being taken care of, and it was a mess over the weekend, and we had to wait till spring to get a storm such as this. But at any rate, some ski areas are happy about it up north. I guess Loon Mountain, I understand, had almost 2 feet of snow, and it was pure snow, great for skiing. But I believe they were quoted as saying they will still be closing sometime in mid-April. So I don't think, unless there's another big storm between now and then, and who knows, it is New England, it certainly could happen. So we shall see about the extension of maybe some days or weeks for some of the ski areas in the northern part of the state anyway. So quite a weekend in many ways between the snowstorm that hit and also lots of basketball. I know there are people who watch college basketball at this time of the year that never do at any other time of the year. And, I'm a casual, very casual college basketball follower during the regular season. But, you know, like everybody else, you get to, you fill out a bracket or two and you have interest. And so I did, I tell you what, I filled out a bracket on ESPN on their sports site. And I'm doing much better with predicting the men's games than I am the women's games, for whatever reason. But not that I have an extensive knowledge of college basketball, but you know, you hear about this so many times when you know, offices fill out brackets and so on, that the person who sometimes knows the least and you know, chooses their selections by the color of their uniforms, for example, does better than the person who says they certainly know a lot about college basketball. They're gonna win the bracket in their office, but it comes down to somebody picking the colors who, on many occasions, wins that competition in the offices. So, you know, I tell you what, I walked in here this, and you know, I always look forward, as I've mentioned on several occasions, to having Andrew's delicious cinnamon coffee. Well, it's not cinnamon coffee. He puts cinnamon in the coffee grounds, in the coffee, that when he makes it here. Every morning, puts cinnamon in the coffee, which is great. And then I come downstairs to the studio here, our plush but not overly ostentatious studios on Reddington Road, and I find a T-shirt on my table here, and the T-shirt is I am Knuff, K-E-N-O-U-G-H, I am Knuff, and guess what that is from? That's from Barbie, an often talked about movie here on Kale and Company. And somewhere, Andrew, in your travels this weekend, you found this.
I saw it, and I said, you know, that is Ken. That is.
I'm just Ken. I'm just Ken, and I am Knuff. Wow, that is nice. And you got the right size, too. Extra, extra large. There. Thank you. That is
you.
That is,
you and I don't have too much of a departure in height, so I will, figured it was a close guess.
I will wear this. I will wear this proudly, as a matter of fact. So that's great. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I am Knuff. I had to take a look at that because, you know, sometimes we talk about Keno here on the show, and in some ways I thought it was I am Keno? No, I am Knuff. That's what it is. So there you go. It could work both ways, folks. It could work both ways, actually. But at any rate, thanks to Andrew for that and all that he does. And we appreciate that. And we appreciate you listening. And I'll tell you what, basketball certainly was in the spotlight over the weekend. But there was some college hockey championships decided. The NCAA men's selection show was yesterday. That goes somewhat under the radar compared to the NCAA basketball selection shows. The Division I men's ice hockey championship selection show goes pretty much under the radar, as does the tournament itself when you compare it to the NCAA basketball tournament. But we have our hockey guru, John Leahy, who's going to be joining us after the break, which is coming up. And he's going to talk about what he saw over the weekend and also the brackets for the 2024 NCAA Division I Men's Hockey Championship, which will begin this week. Actually, the tournament gets underway on Thursday. And in fact, in a couple of New England locations. Now, every other year, Manchester hosts a regional at SNHU Arena, but this is not one of those years. But there will be regionals this year in Providence, Rhode Island, and in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I'm sure, just like Manchester, tickets are scarce and hard to come by, but you know, sometimes you can scrounge up a pair if you look on the secondary markets. And all that action will begin on Thursday, the NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Championship, all culminating in St. Paul, Minnesota, with the Frozen Four coming up April 11th and 13th. All right, we will take a break, and then John Leahy will join us. And we'll get more specific about the matchups. And we have more Shohei Ohtani news to talk about. No lack of subjects today, or topics, here on Kale & Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and we shall be right back. Welcome back. Kale & Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us on this Monday. Wow. No lack of college sports over the weekend. And here to talk specifically about the hockey aspect of it, which sometimes, unfortunately, goes under the radar, is our hockey East guru, John Leahy. John, welcome back.
Ken, thanks so much. Great to be with you on this Monday morning.
Wow. I imagine you had fun over the weekend at TD Garden with the Hockey East Championships.
Yeah, it really was terrific, Ken. Two great games. BU defeats Maine 4-1, and Boston College with a huge 8-1 win over UMass. And, two very interesting games. I thought Maine outplayed BU on 5-on-5 hockey, but BU's power play was terrific, and that set up a great final between BU and BC, and BC continued their dominance as they defeat BU, and of course their ticket had already been punched to the NCAA tournament, but Boston College really making a statement as we head into the tournament here with 12 consecutive wins. Tough to pick against the Eagles.
Well, that is true, and of course they are the number one seed in their regional coming up this weekend, and they don't have to travel very far either.
Yeah, Ken, BC is the number one seed in the entire tournament.
Yep.
So BC will be in Providence, and they'll take on Michigan Tech, who's the 16 seed. And you can see that one Friday on ESPNU at 2 o'clock, and Wisconsin and Quinnipiac is the other game in that bracket, and that one's on ESPN News at 5:30. So, interesting bracket there, Ken. You've got Quinnipiac trying to defend their national title, and I'd love to see a BC-Quinnipiac final. That would be a lot of fun.
Wouldn't that be? Oh, wow. Are you going down, John?
Nope. I'm not going to the regionals, Ken. I'm going to watch it from the comfort of my own home.
Well, there you go. So it'll be in Providence, though, and then the other regional in New England is going to be at the Mass Mutual Center in Springfield.
Yeah, this is a very intriguing bracket. You have Denver, who is a number one seed, and they're going to take on UMass, Denver being the number one seed in that bracket, I mean.
Yeah.
And UMass just barely squeaking into the tournament. They needed help. After they lost on Friday, they needed help. They needed Denver and Cornell to win on Saturday, which they both did. So that gets UMass in. And UMass will have a very short trip from Amherst to Springfield.
Right.
Yep, that's on ESPN2 on Thursday at 2 o'clock. And then Maine and Cornell will be the other matchup. That's on ESPN News at 5:30. And, Ken, we could have an all-Hockey East final in that bracket if Maine and UMass win their game. So, UMass, I went on Facebook yesterday and I saw UMass urging their fans to buy tickets because they know that the folks up in Maine are going to snatch up a lot of those tickets.
Oh, so you bet. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a fun final if those two teams got in.
Yeah, that it would be. And as always, as you pointed out, some great New England representation from Hockey East and the ECAC. And as always, it's going to be a terrific tournament. And I mentioned, and we talked about this a little bit last week, how it always is under the radar when you compare it to the NCAA basketball tournament, but certainly no less excitement in the games themselves. I mean, they are terrific matchups, and you are going to see the best in college hockey unfold this coming weekend. And then they're going to wait a week. They're going to skip a week and then go out to St. Paul, Minnesota for the Frozen Four.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ken. You know, if you talk to people who are close to the college hockey scene, you can see the level of excitement that they bring to the table. So even if it doesn't seem like they get as much attention as the college basketball, the college hockey inner circle really shows you how exciting this entire tournament is. A couple of other brackets, too, Ken, I wanted to mention. Maryland Heights, Missouri will be hosting a bracket. That's out in the St. Louis area. Lindenwood is the host school. And you've got the Michigan State taking on Western Michigan. That'll be on ESPNU Friday at 5 o'clock. And North Dakota will play Michigan on ESPNU at 8:30. And then the other bracket is in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. First time ever that a college hockey regional has been held in South Dakota. BU will be traveling out to South Dakota. They'll play RIT on ESPNU Thursday at 5. And then it'll be Minnesota against Omaha on ESPNU at 8:30. So the finals of these brackets are Saturday and Sunday. The Springfield and Sioux Falls finals are Saturday at 4 and 6:30, respectively. And the Providence and Maryland Heights finals are on Sunday at 4 and 6:30. All of the final games will be on ESPNU.
Well, there you go. And, John, you're going to have a busy several days there, glued to your TV, watching the best in college hockey. And, again, Quinnipiac is the defending national champion under their coach, Rand Pecknold, who hails from Bow and had some time in Concord, too. His dad was a terrific player in Concord at the Everett Arena, and that's pretty much where Rand himself learned the game. So it could be, and as you pointed out, John, what a matchup that would be with the top seed overall, Boston College. If they knock off Michigan Tech and Quinnipiac beats Wisconsin, I like you, would love to see a BC Quinnipiac final in the in that regional. That would be terrific. That would be something.
Yeah, it really will be. And you know, the Bobcats certainly have they are certainly a hunted team after winning the national championship last year, but if they do wind up going up against Boston College, the Eagles are just a juggernaut this year, and that should be great. And Ken, I also wanted to mention that the women had their national championship game at the Whittemore Center in Durham yesterday. What a terrific game between Ohio State and Wisconsin. Ohio State dethroning the Badgers, who won it last year. Ohio State scored a late goal in the third period. Joy Dunn, a freshman, scored the game-winning goal. So congratulations to Ohio State. And I know the Whittemore Center did a terrific job hosting the Frozen Four. And from what I've heard, it was a great experience for people who attended. And so another great women's college hockey season comes to a close.
You know, it does. And I'll tell you what, the crowd, I was not there, but I certainly saw clips of it. And the Whittemore Center was almost packed yesterday. You would have thought the UNH men were playing Maine. I mean, the place was rocking yesterday, and you know, they held the regional there at the Whittemore Center this year, and certainly it was one of the largest crowds ever for a women's hockey final. And John, I really think that women's hockey in general, collegiately and now on a professional level, is really gathering a lot of momentum.
Yeah, it's here to stay. And, of course, WPHL, that getting going, that's a huge factor. The women's game is going to continue to grow. I think we saw that this year with the Beanpot coming to the Garden.
Right,
championship game there. So hopefully that momentum will continue. And I had a talk with Dave Flint when we saw Northeastern earlier this year. And Dave seems to think that they're going to continue to get the Beanpot in the Garden, at least the championship round. And if they can, you know, fill enough seats and garner enough interest, I think you'll see the whole tournament being played there at some point, and that's long overdue. I hope we see it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, oh, absolutely so, and I think you will, because there seems now to be a lot of interest in women's hockey, as so many more you know, young girls, I mean, are getting involved. I mean, it's taking off on the high school level, and then going on to the collegiate level, and now a bona fide professional league that is going to be expanding. I mean, the reception has been so good in the cities where it started this year, that they're already talking about expanding in the not-too-distant future. So, obviously, the interest is there, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, it sure is, and I love to see it. I know a lot of people that are connected with the women's games, and it's not only the games itself, but it's how the broadcasts have been taken off. You're seeing a lot more females in broadcasting and sportscasting. I talked to several of them who were involved with the Beanpot. And they did a fantastic job. So I'm excited for the growth of the women's game. I know it's going to continue, and it's just so great to see.
And another thing that is going to be great to hear will be John Leahy in studio, folks, upcoming on Kale and Company. So get ready for that. And John, we're looking forward to your in-studio appearance in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I can't wait, Ken. It's always great coming up to New Hampshire. I love seeing you and seeing the great state of New Hampshire, the Granite State. It's always worth the trip up there for me, so I'm looking forward to having a chance to get together with you in the studio there.
All right. John Leahy, our Hockey East college hockey guru, and we appreciate that. It's heating up. The regionals are this weekend for the men, and they are going to provide plenty of fireworks, that's for sure. John, thanks so much, and we will see you soon.
Ken, I truly appreciate it. Have a happy Easter.
Thank
and
you.
Also a happy Easter to all your listeners.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that, John. And we will see you in the not-too-distant future here on Reddington Road.
I can't wait. It's going to be a great time. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, sir. We'll be back. Have some Shohei Ohtani news. I want to tell you about a great show that I was able to attend on Friday night, a show that was just absolutely amazing. Amazing for many reasons. We'll talk to you about that when we get back. Kale and Company live right here, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Kale and Company live right here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Presented by Northeast Delta Dental. I want to tell you what a time Kitty Ray and I had on Friday night at the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut. Had no idea what a great night it would be. We knew it would be a lot of fun and entertaining as Tony Orlando, remember Tony Orlando and Don, tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. You know, that was a song, a big hit back in the 70s. And, you know, we thought it was going to be a fun night because it was billed as Tony Orlando's final concert. Of course, we've heard that from many entertainers before. How many farewell tours has Cher had? How many farewell tours has Elton John had? So we figured, well, you know, Tony Orlando, I mean, he is 79. He'll be 80 on April 3rd. But come on, Frankie Valli's still out there, and he's well into his 80s. He's 87, 88. Herb Alpert, still out there. He's 88, 89, so, you know, 80. Big deal, right? Big deal. And so anyway, I had never seen Tony Orlando perform live before. Of course, he had a show, you know, at the peak of his popularity on the network, and Don was with him on the show, but hasn't performed with Don for years. Just going out as a single act, doing a lot of work in Branson, Missouri, and around the country as well. But he wanted his farewell concert to be at Mohegan Sun because they, in some way, revitalized his career back in the late 90s, when even before they had a 10,000-seat arena. At Mohegan Sun, they had a small room, really, where entertainers used to come and perform. And the Wolf Den, which maybe seats at best 800, 900 people, maybe. And so in the late 90s, they invited Tony Orlando to perform. He did, got a great reception, and has performed there since on a number of occasions in the big arena once it was constructed. So that's where he wanted to perform for the final time. All right, so, you know, we thought it was going to be great to come out, you know, sing some Don songs, sing some Tony Orlando and Don songs, thought he'd have some, you know, backup vocalists and sing some standards, maybe sing a little Sinatra, Tony Bennett, whatever. Okay, so he comes out about 7:45 on Friday night. Does a couple of songs with a tremendous band. Tremendous band that he had. It was an all-star band, really. And he was incredible. And then, a few songs into it, he sings Neil Diamond's America. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Neil Diamond's song, and a very patriotic song. And then, after that is all over, he does a great tribute to our veterans, and asking if anyone was in the audience a veteran of World War II. And believe it or not, there was one gentleman that was there in the audience from World War II, and naturally he got a big ovation. And then he asked if there were any Korean War veterans, and then any Vietnam War veterans. And the number increased each time. There were a few Korean War veterans, more Vietnam War veterans, and then some from Desert Storm. And he did a tremendous tribute to veterans. And, of course, they got standing ovations, as they should. And then, who appears on the stage? Lee Greenwood. To sing God Bless the USA. And I am telling you, I mean, with this band or orchestra, really, band would be an understatement. With this great collection of musicians that Tony Orlando had backing him up, Lee Greenwood sang just an amazing rendition of God Bless the USA, and I don't believe there was a dry eye in the house after that performance. What a remarkable performance by Lee Greenwood, and no one expected. I mean, at least, and Tony said he was surprised too. I think he found out earlier in the day, and I don't think he knew before that, however. At least that's what he said. So at any rate, Lee Greenwood was there. He introduced some members, some people that showed up, friends of his that were in the audience, including Priscilla Presley. Priscilla Presley, Elvis's widow, was in the audience. He was introduced, by the way, before he began to sing. I didn't want to leave this part out. He was introduced by a gentleman who has been on the radio for decades in New York on Sirius Satellite Radio, and is back on the air in New York on WABC on Saturday nights doing an all-request show. Cousin Brucey, Bruce Morrow, showed up because it was Bruce Morrow who introduced Tony Orlando to an audience years ago, back in the 60s, at Palisades Park in New Jersey. So the man who first introduced Tony Orlando to an audience, before anybody knew who Tony Orlando was, at Palisades Park in New Jersey, here we go. In 2024, Bruce Morrow is there to introduce Tony Orlando once again. It was just an amazing night. And maybe the showstopper of them all, Dawn returned. You know, the two women who backed up Tony Orlando for years on his hits, they showed up. They hadn't worked together in years, although, you know, Tony said he stays in touch and talks to them a lot. But they hadn't performed in years, and here they were on the stage Friday night. And he brought back some of his friends from the entertainment business. Jay Siegel, who was the former lead singer of the Tokens. You know, the Lion Sleeps Tonight. This guy, what an amazing voice. He did Lion Sleeps Tonight with that great band, and it was just amazing. He brought back one of the singers from the Dupree's, another a kind of a doo-wop group back from the 50s and 60s. It was an amazing night. As I mentioned, Priscilla Presley was in the audience. Bill O'Reilly, you know Bill O'Reilly? He was in the audience. television host and author. And also in the audience were the parents of the Jonas Brothers. I mean, a very eclectic gathering. Priscilla Presley, Bill O'Reilly, the parents of the Jonas Brothers, and packed house at the Mohegan Sun Arena on Friday night. It was just, it just blew my mind. I thought, you know, you'd have Tony Orlando, you know, on stage, you know, 90 minutes maybe, doing his songs and, you know, a few others. But never the 3 hour plus show that we saw on Friday night at Mohegan Sun. It was great just to be there, just to be, you know, like, you know, fly on the wall or whatever. It was a lot of fun at Mohegan Sun. All right, you hear the music playing. My body is swaying. No, to quote a Tony Orlando song, you know, knock three times. All right, we'll take a break. Kale and Company continues to tell you a little bit more about what's going on in the world of Shohei Ohtani. Could learn more later today. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Welcome back. Kale and Company Live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. And while most of the sports focus was on men's and women's college basketball over the weekend, there was still plenty of talk about Shohei Ohtani and his involvement or lack thereof and the investigation that is going on. And Shohei Ohtani, this is now according to ESPN, Shohei Ohtani briefly came into the Dodgers clubhouse on Sunday, and he declared that he would make himself available to reporters and address the illegal gambling and theft allegations levied against his former interpreter the following afternoon. So he came in last night. So Shohei Ohtani doesn't interact much with the media. I know the language barrier is there, although he did have an interpreter by the name of Ipe Mizuhara, who was fired by the Dodgers, if you haven't heard, on Wednesday in the wake of media inquiries surrounding at least $4.5 million in wire transfers sent from Ohtani's bank account to a Southern California bookmaking operation that is under federal investigation. Now, you have to know that California is one of about 10 states now that does not have legal sports gaming. One of 10. New Hampshire, of course, has had it for quite some time now with DraftKings. But in order to place a wager in California on a sporting event, you have to do it illegally. So anyway, Ohtani's camp initially said that Ohtani transferred the funds to cover his interpreter, Mizuhara's debt, and presented Mizuhara for an interview with ESPN on Tuesday night, during which he laid out the process in detail. However, the following day, a statement from Burke Brettler of the law firm representing Ohtani in the matter said that the two-way star, meaning Ohtani, who's a pitcher and a hitter, DH, Ohtani has been the victim of a massive theft. Mizuhara then told ESPN that Ohtani had no knowledge of his debt and that Ohtani had not transferred the money. as was reported following the lengthy 90-minute interview with ESPN. Ms. O'Hara said that Ohtani had transferred the funds, but then he told ESPN, the interviewer that spent 90 minutes with him, that he lied. And that Ohtani did not transfer the money. It's a very convoluted story. It has been since it came out last week. Dodgers, of course, opening their season in South Korea during that time, which didn't make things any easier. And Ohtani was ushered out of the clubhouse last week without addressing the media after the second and final game Thursday night. Now on Sunday, meaning yesterday, before an exhibition game that marked the Dodgers' first stateside game since the matter surfaced, 10 cameras surrounded Dodgers manager Dave Roberts on the floor of the third base dugout, with at least a dozen more lining up along the railing just beyond it. And Dave Roberts said it's good that Ohtani will address the matter Monday afternoon, which means this afternoon. Roberts added, "It's the right thing to do. I'm happy he's going to speak and speak to what he knows and give his thoughts on the whole situation. I think it will give us all a little bit more clarity." End quote. I mean, we are talking here, folks, if you're not familiar with Shohei Ohtani. I mean, he is the closest comparison we have ever had to Babe Ruth. I mean, a man who can pitch and a man who can hit a lot of home runs. And that combination has not been with us since the days of George Herman Babe Ruth. And we're talking like almost 100 years ago since Babe Ruth played. I mean, this is, like a once-in-a-century player. And baseball really doesn't need his image to be tarnished. Think about Pete Rose, the gambling scandal surrounding Pete Rose, baseball's all-time hit leader. No one had more hits in Major League Baseball than Pete Rose. Nobody ever will. That's a record that will not be broken. Pete Rose, as a result of his gambling, was banished from baseball and not in the Hall of Fame. Ohtani has not been accused of gambling, and none of the bets is believed to have been made on baseball by his interpreter, a circumstance that could lead to a permanent ban from the sport. California, one of several states which and sports betting remains illegal. The bookmaker in question is Orange County resident Matthew Boyer. He had his home raided in October amid an investigation by the same U.S. Attorney's Office handling a sprawling federal money laundering and illegal gambling case in Las Vegas that drew in former minor league baseball player Wayne Nix. Major League Baseball announced Friday afternoon that its Department of Investigations also is formally looking into this matter. Ohtani is, however, expected to continue to play while the investigation unfolds. Penalties for players who place non-baseball bets with illegal bookmakers fall under the discretion of the commissioner. The last case was in 2015, when then Miami Marlins pitcher Jared Cosart was fined an undisclosed amount. That was for placing a non-baseball bet with a bookie. Roberts said the Dodgers, this is Dave Roberts now, the manager of the Dodgers, who stole the biggest base in Red Sox history in 2004, Roberts said, "The Dodgers heard a presentation during spring training that outlined the MLB rules around gambling, as is the case every year, but that the topic has not been readdressed. Ohtani has not formally spoken to the team at large," Roberts said, though he believes Ohtani has had, in his words, one-off conversations with certain teammates about the matter. Roberts added that Ohtani, who was in his typical number two spot in the lineup while serving as the designated hitter for Sunday's 5-3 win against the Los Angeles Angels, Ohtani's former team, and as far as Roberts is concerned, it's business as usual. Hours prior to the game, first of three exhibition games before the Dodgers restart their regular season against St. Louis on Thursday, Ohtani wore a big smile while walking back from right field and waving to his former Angels teammates. Speaking to reporters on Monday is Ohtani's decision, not a request the Dodgers made, according to Dave Roberts. Dodgers have been no strangers to off-field legal issues. 3 years ago, the Dodgers signed Trevor Bauer, who faced sexual assault allegations that led to the longest suspension in the history of MLB's domestic violence policy. At some point in the near future, another one of their former pitchers, Julio Urias, could become the first player to face two suspensions under the same policy, the domestic violence policy. The Ohtani situation is vastly different, but it has triggered another negative off-the-field storyline for a team hyper-focused on winning the World Series. But Roberts says he doesn't believe it will be a distraction. He said, "We're certainly battle-tested from that regard, and we've shown over the years that we continue to move forward. And not to be insensitive towards various situations, but we all understand we have jobs to do. First and foremost, playing baseball and preparing has got to be part of it." End quote from manager Dave Roberts of the Los Angeles Dodgers, who certainly wants this matter to go away ASAP. But, you know, it probably won't. And again, it'll be very interesting. Ohtani will have a new interpreter today when he meets the media at Dodger Stadium later this afternoon. And it will be very intriguing to get his slant on it. You know, he has not really addressed the issue as yet. And we shall see how this all plays out. But it's not a good thing for baseball, certainly not a good thing for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and in particular, Shohei Ohtani. So that's all we know right now, but more forthcoming, we think, later on tonight. We want to thank you very much for being with us today. We always appreciate that and hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll be talking with a member of the State Fire Marshal's Office about fire safety tomorrow during our monthly visit with the New Hampshire Department of Safety, which we look forward to, and another surprise guest as well in studio. That'll do it for this edition of Kale and Company. Thanks very much for listening. And remember, folks, to always look on the bright side of life. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Have a great Monday, everybody.